My name is Jeff Harbach. I'm the CEO of Coffin Fellows and the host of the Coffin Fellows podcast. This season, our podcast is produced in partnership with Mighty Capital and features different Coffin Fellows as co-hosts. In this podcast, we dive deep into the personal narratives of some of the most successful names in the venture capital industry. But we're not here just to explore their highlight reels, however impressive they are. From failures and formative learning experiences to inflection points and aha moments, we discuss the real, authentic journeys that each individual goes through to become the best version of themselves in order to best serve the entrepreneurs they invest in. Covering various themes in venture capital investing, we speak with the world's top leaders in capital formation, all from a place of authenticity and vulnerability. Together, we'll unravel what truly makes a great venture capital investor. Now let's meet today's host and their guest.
Hi, I'm Wayne Moore, managing partner at ABG Basecamp Fund, and I'm excited to host this series on Vet to Venture, where we talk with veterans about their unique path from the military to a career in venture and technology. Let's hear from my guest today.
So I'm excited to have Sherman Williams, the managing director of the Academy Investor Network, with me today. How are you, Sherman?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing well. Excited to connect with you today and thrilled to have you join me on the podcast, where I'm connecting with folks like you that are paving the way in careers in venture and technology that come from somewhat non-traditional backgrounds, and in this case, the military. So Sherman, you and I share that background as former naval officers, and I'd love to get into what you're up to now, running a new fund, the Academy Investor Network, but I'd love to start with a little background on your military career. What exactly did you do in the Navy?
Yeah, so first of all, I matriculated into the Navy out of the U.S. Naval Academy. So I went to NAPS, so I was a Napster, Naval Academy graduate. And then I was a SWO for a very short amount of time.
SWO, that's Service Warrant Officer, right?
So, I'm sorry. Let me not use the acronym. It's like I'm in a joint service environment, right? So I was a Service Warrant Officer for a very short amount of time. And then I moved over into intelligence. And I was an intelligence officer for several years, thoroughly enjoyed it, was able to deploy all over the world. And I found out a lot about myself in the Navy. So that's what I did in the Navy. But I think that the greatest thing is what I discovered, the things I discovered about myself.
Awesome. And like, what are some of those things?
My ability to persevere through pretty much anything, not pretty much through anything. Persevere through anything, hard work. I developed a love of technology. I developed a love of international things. I didn't know I was international, but when you're 23 years old and you go on your first deployment, you just find out that you're really into it, right? I had never been outside the United States of America before I went on deployment in the Navy. So there were a lot of, you know, known unknowns and unknown unknowns, you know, to quote Rumsfeld, I guess. I say that I pretty much grew up a second time in the Navy, separate from my parents' house. They got me going, but I definitely grew up in the Navy.
Oh, that's great. And you talked a little bit more about sort of your early interest in technology that was mm-hmm. born in the Navy. But what ultimately led you to a career in technology and ultimately in venture?
So it was the intersection of three things. I was really into finance. I became interested in finance while as a junior naval officer, as an ensign, because I didn't want to just blow my money. I didn't want to be the guy to go buy the Mustang or the motorcycle and need to crash on friends' couches. I wanted to, you know, kind of do the right thing with my capital. So I was interested in finance, but I was also interested in innovation, and I'm interested in technology. So venture seemed to be the middle of the Venn diagram for those three things. I didn't know what venture was. I had zero background, zero. I have no family in finance. You know, folks that are older than me that ever worked in an investment bank or even a top tier consulting firm, definitely not in venture capital. There are a few entrepreneurs in my family. There are, and successful ones, but they were small business types, not someone trying to scale like a venture scalable business. So zero background there. And for the community I come from, Chicago, South Side, and South Suburbs, it was that just really didn't exist in that world. And of course, it didn't exist in the world of the Naval Academy. But what I did was I started seeing a lot of startups come up and come about 03, 04, 2003, 2004, 2005, 2006, et cetera, and became really fascinated. And I happened to be in Afghanistan when I was always a kind of a sci-fi nerd, space nerd. Happened to be in Afghanistan when Elon Musk got that fourth rocket off the ground. I think it was around September 2008. And I was like, whoa, how did this happen? So just doing research, et cetera, seeing how it occurred. And it, for me, I was really interested in space because of, you know, a lot of academy grads, you know, astronaut program is made up of a good chunk of military folks. And a lot of those people are academy graduates. Mm-hmm. So it was just something that was just, I don't know, it was just, ever since I was a kid, I tried to go to space camp when I was a kid, but my parents definitely couldn't afford that. So that wasn't happening. So, you know, go watch Star Wars three times in a row or something, I don't know. And just kind of, you know, became fascinated then. I was like, how did he make this happen? And at the same time, right after I left Afghanistan, I was stationed in Southeast Asia. And I was able to go around India. I was, you know, Manila, the Philippines. I was able to be in and around China a bit. And I was just fascinated at the growth of Asia and seeing how it was coming about. And, you know, at around that time, there were a lot of venture-backable startups that were really starting to come up. And it was just fascinating to me, the venture-backed company. So it wasn't so much venture as it was the companies that were being created. And so it was really the intersection of those three things. And I really started to see that these companies could change the world. And I had lived a life of service as a young man, still young, but younger man, had lived a life of service. And I said, what is my life going to be like? Like, what is this? I had a couple of near-death experiences at this point. ICU twice. Oh, wow. You know, I've been shot at, you know, been a rocket attacked. It just really makes you think, like, am I just going to go back and just, you know, be a finance dude or, you know, I don't know, be a sales guy? There's got to be something else to this that I can do, because I kind of, even today, feel like I'm on borrowed time. I mean, some of those incidents that occurred to me, I probably should have passed away. Had this been hundreds of years, however many years ago, I would have passed away. So I said, I'm going to live my life in a very meaningful way. And for me, that's combining my passions, those three things I mentioned, right? That finance, innovation, and technology, but backing folks that can change the world. And it might sound bushy out of, you know, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, whatever the saying is. But I think my cause and my purpose is as good as any other. I'm here, and that's what I'm doing, and that's why I'm working in venture.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So I guess, obviously, working in venture now, can you just kind of quickly, for our listeners, walk me through just the tactical steps that you took from, you know, so now we're post-military. How did you get to a career in venture? Because I know it's a really sort of limited field. There's not a ton of opportunity. So I'd love to understand how you actually made it happen.
You know, for the listeners, I did not know what I was doing whatsoever. Not even a little bit. I did know to go to a good business school. And now looking back, I think a lot of people don't even have to do that. Most people don't have to do that to get an venture. If anything, some funds frown upon that if you're trying to just go work for a fund. You know, because, you know, like they say, the best way to become a good runner is to go start running, right? So, you know, ideally it would be to go start a company, try to get or go work for an early stage company and then come up that way. But this is something for the listeners that's, I think, unique for us military veterans, us post 9/11 grads. I mean, the business schools, the law schools, et cetera, professional degree program, master, you know, graduate degree programs have really made a concerted effort to bring some of us in, because you have to understand, I not only did I not have any background, I left my parents' house at 17 years old. I couldn't even smoke, right? I was in a uniform until I was 30. I come from an area that has nothing, very little people that I knew were in finance. I never knew anyone worked in bank, consulting, technology. So I not only did I not have the upbringing as a child necessarily that's involved in this world, I couldn't even see it in college, right? And I definitely no internships, and not even my entire 20s. You know, I went on 4 deployments, right? I was overseas for about 5 years total, right? So, like, there was really no outlet for me. So the business schools, I think I was part of a group, and I think there was a concerted effort by the business schools to bring some of these folks in the fold and say, hey, you know, you guys are about, you're not 10 years behind, but you had 10 years of different experiences as your peers, right? Let's accelerate your learning by going through a program. And what I did is I went to University of Chicago Booth, which I think is one of the best decisions I've ever made, right? It's a place for people who are intellectually curious and like rigor. And I just completely loved it and ate it up. And so that's how I got going. I ended up interning at a venture shop while in business school, and interning at an investment bank while in business school. So that's how I got my first bona fides to some degree when it came to venture. And then I was kind of in that ecosystem at Chicago Booth. Now, then I left it. I'll keep going. I left it and went into banking because I felt I actually had imposter syndrome. I just felt I had a lot to learn. I was like, I'm in business school. Some of these classes are hard. I never seen this finance stuff. Some people are crushing it. You know, I feel like I got a lot to learn. Where can I learn the most in the quickest way? Right. And I felt it was like, let me go banking for a bit of time. Right. I now tell people you don't have to do that. As a matter of fact, I wouldn't do that if that's not necessarily your passion, particularly a lot of us ex-military folks that are a little bit older when we go to business school. I went at 30. I got graduated at 32, but I do office hours at Booth. I opened myself to Wharton, Harvard, a couple other places for the Armed Forces group. And, you know, folks are getting out at 36, 37 years old. Mm-hmm. That's you know, to say you're going to go do banking for 2 years of consulting and then go do, that starts to add up. Right. I mean, the years really start to add up. So, you know, I ended up going banking, learned a ton, very appreciative of the time, met some good people and got to work on some interesting things. But after 6 years, which was too long, I will say, I finally punched and moved into venture full time.
That's great. So it seems like University of Chicago Booth and the business school experience was really sort of a catalyst professionally to sort of one kind of level set coming out of the military, got a lot of that sort of tactical and functional knowledge, be able to spend a couple years banking, and then from there really kick off into this career and venture, which kind of brings us up to speed and up to date rather. So I'd love to dive in and talk, what you are and I are both really excited about is these careers in venture. And so right now you are a managing partner for a new fund, the Academy Investor Network. Tell me about your new fund.
Yeah, so it's AIN Ventures. You know, AIN is short for Academy Investor Network. Why is it called that? It's because we run a syndicate also, the AIN Syndicate. The syndicate is made up of graduates of 5 years military service academies. And like I told you guys before, I went to the Naval Academy. The other four are, for those listeners who are not aware, or West Point, which is U.S. Military Academy. There is Air Force Academy out in Colorado Springs, Coast Guard Academy in Connecticut, and Merchant Marine Academy right in Long Island. And we bring those folks together to invest alongside the fund. Now, why do we choose those folks to bring together? Well, other than myself and my co-founder who went to West Point, Emily McMahon, other than us coming from those institutions, We believe that venture-backed companies are where the wealth creation, job creation, and innovation are occurring in our economy. And we want our fellow graduates to be able to participate in that, right? Not too different from the idea from the folks at Alumni Venture Group. But, for us, a guy who goes to Naval Academy and drives a ship or goes to Naval Academy as a Marine or, Army guy that's flying a helo, him coming out and looking at a dog food company, he can totally do that. But I think there's a better slice of things for him to look at and where he could provide a value add as far as his diligence and his thoughts that would be superior to really anyone else. And that is dual use technology startups. So that's one thing that we invest in. And those are companies that make the country safer, operate more efficiently, and have a strong commercial use case. Examples of dual use technology are Civic Tech. Imagine companies that improve the conversation between municipalities and constituents. Mm-hmm. We've invested in a company along those lines called POCO, POCO.us, for those listening. We look at defense tech, of course, disaster tech, think FEMA, space tech, because space is largely the purview of governments. That's where the overwhelming majority of the revenue for those companies is coming from. So we focus on those dual-use technology companies, and we believe our syndicate has a better ability to diligence those kinds of startups than anyone else. Now, separately, another part of our thesis, we invest in veteran-led startups. Now, we don't just invest in Academy grads. We invest in all veterans or people who spent time in the Coast Guard or folks that spent time in the Merchant Marines, right? And the thought process there is that we're investing at the early stages. So you're betting the jockey, not the horse. You're betting on the human being. Who better to assess whether or not this human being has the leadership, determination, and grit? Who better to assess that than folks that come from that background? Now, we're not just picking anybody. There are about 22 million veterans in the United States. Academy grads make up 4% of all those veterans. Yet, we represent, of all veteran entrepreneurs that build technology companies, Academy grads represent 40% of those folks. So yet we represent, I want to say again, we represent 4% of the population, but we start 40% of the technology companies. So what we did, what we've done with AIN, with the syndicate, is we brought together the most entrepreneurial group of veterans to invest in all veterans and in dual use technology. Now that's the syndicate. Now separately, we have AIN Ventures, the fund. The syndicate invests alongside the fund. We are a fund that happens to have a syndicate, not a syndicate that happens to have a fund, right? Yeah. So we're fun to have a syndicate. We do early stage investing. We invest at the pre-seed and at the seed stage. We call ourselves seed focused, so we're mainly seed, but we will do some pre-seed investing. And organically, we would do it if it makes sense for us. But again, the thesis for the fund is the same as that of the syndicate. And we are able to help. The syndicate helps with diligence, syndicate helps with sourcing, et cetera. That fund invests at the, like I said, pre-seed and seed stage. It's a $50 million fund. And the other thing is that both the fund and the syndicate have a keen focus on investing in underestimated minorities that fit within that thesis. That thesis, again, is dual-use technology startups and is separately veteran-led startups. So we're looking for those African-Americans, Latinos, women that are building companies that are either dual use or they were a veteran and they're starting a technology startup company.
That's an interesting point. And you and I have talked about backing underrepresented or underestimated minorities before. And I'd love for you to help me understand sort of the alignment or the overlap between a military fund and those efforts and backing those underrepresented founders.
The U.S. federal government is the largest employer of Africa. I'll stick with African-Americans because I have those numbers at the ready. I am African-American myself, right? So the federal government is the largest employer of African-Americans. The U.S. military is about 40% underestimated minorities, which includes African-Americans. I think over a quarter are African-Americans. And the DOD is the largest employer of African-Americans of any single entity, right, in the United States. To invest in veterans is to invest in African Americans, right? I mean, it's such a large portion of the population, so it's a must. We've already backed a veteran, African American veteran from Chicago, Daniel Rogers, AM Money. So we've already put our money where our mouth is, right? So it's just wildly important. What people have to understand is that. And I see this as a not as young man that has been in the civilian world now for 10 years, right? And that 10 years I've been in the civilian world is still not as long as I wore a uniform, because if you include the academy, it's 13 years, right? And when it comes to certain things, the U.S. military is ahead of regular U.S. society when it comes to race relations. There are still issues because the military is simply a reflection of the society. However, the military is more of a meritocracy. What does that mean? It's not a subjective in certain things. Now, there, to get your SWO call, that's subjective. To get your SWO pin, that's subjective. Mm-hmm. To get qualified to some of these rates is subjective, right? To become a, intelligence officer, a SEAL or whatever, you got to go through a training pipeline, and there's subjectivity there to some degree. But if someone has been on multiple deployments, when it comes to doing your job, when the pressure is cooking, that's not subjective. That's sports, right? You see a lot of African-Americans thrive in sports, right? Remember, African-Americans were locked, believe it or not, were locked out of sports for many years, right? Mm-hmm. Which is crazy. And because at some point, in the military, things get really real. Let's just leave it at that. And people don't care. Although a lot of those biases that we hold, they will go away. And I've seen it. And it's whoever can get the job done will get it done. And those people, that looks like the rainbow, right? When it all is said and done, when it comes down to it, right? So the military is actually fairly far ahead. And you've seen that. I mean, there was the Army general, the first African-American general became a general. But it was 1949, which is 19 years before African-Americans had civil rights. I mean, baseball was not integrated. Football was not integrated. Basketball was not integrated at that time, right? So, a lot of pushes for, making sure we have strong, making sure we have a decent amount of African-Americans that are graduating college, et cetera, was so that we could have African-Americans as part of the officer corps. Because you can't have all the enlisted looking one color and all the officers another color. That's not going to work, right? You're not going to have great esprit de corps, right? So if you have things like that, and there were issues back in Vietnam and because of things like that. So, to further answer your question, to invest in our thesis is to invest in underestimated minorities, not just African Americans. I want to point out Latinos also, and women. And one other thing is that you will see that in dual use technology, these companies, when we say dual use, we actually prefer for the majority of the company's revenue to be outside of the government once they hit maturity, right? Mm-hmm. When it comes to eventually getting a contract with the government, right, that makes up some portion of your revenue as a startup, there are tremendous benefits if you are an underestimated minority. The AA program is a great example, right? So we get tremendous benefits as investors backing these kinds of companies, right? Plus, Emily is a woman, I'm African American, right? Male, right? We come from these communities, right? And it generates alpha in the sense that there may be some contracts that these folks get or a larger contract that they get that others may not necessarily get because they are an estimated minority, right? So for us, it's a complete win-win.
No, that's great. And in building the firm, obviously you had some venture experience before working with other firms. I guess, what was the opportunity that you saw or the advantages that military or former military folks bring? And then also, as you're competing sort of in this venture landscape, what advantages do you have as a fund for tracking deals, finding those companies that will outperform, and then also helping to support those entrepreneurs?
So I'll be brutally honest as far as me and opportunities I saw. My entire time in banking, I was trying to learn as much, and I actually told some people this, I was literally trying to learn as much as humanly possible, as fast as possible, and get the heck out of there and go do what I really wanted to do, which is I wanted to be an investor, right? I mean, period, point blank. And it is what it is. I was just trying to learn. I was always staying late and working my butt off and like a maniac, because I was just trying to gather information in order to learn. What I see, is, and now looking back, that wasn't necessary. It's probably go do that for 2 years, go work at a startup or something along those lines and kind of diversify that experience. But, me starting AIN alongside Emily is my entrepreneur experience, right? Someone who's launching a fund, you're an entrepreneur by default. But being in charge of small units in the military and making mistakes, which I did, and learning from them, and then finally by the time, that was at 23, 24, and then by the time you're 28, 29, you're really hitting your stride as far as being a leader. That is something that, unless you started a company, you probably don't have an experience set like that to pull from. And I learned that in the military, and that's something military folks can use to their advantage. Also, EQ, being able to deal with different personalities, knowing when to quickly just call BS, understanding, I'll give you some tactical things, understanding that you have to train people. And you just can't let them go right away because hiring is expensive in the civilian world, right? Particularly at a startup. And the same thing in the military. Like, we don't have a draft. So you kind of have what you have. The folks that volunteered, right? A lot of those things that I learned in the military, and that perseverance and that hard work, are invaluable for venture capital. They actually, some of those things actually hurt me when I was a banker. Because as a banker, I'm an associate. I'm like, you know, in the military, I kind of have a thing. It's, you know, it's kind of lead, follow, or get the F out the way. Right? And if you see someone stumbling or stuttering or whatever, you're like, hey, man, move over. Let me run with it. Like, what are we doing right now?
Right?
And you really just can't do that in banking. You can't do that in a corporate environment. It's tough to do. There are some special places that allow you to do that. But, you know, for a lot of places will not. But in a startup, when you're running your own thing, that's what you have to do, right? You may need to get out the way and bring on someone that can do something. So that's the advantage from the military standpoint. It's a lot of those intangibles that are really just hard to come by. And you understand pressure and you understand a crisis environment and you know how to laugh at it. You know, me launching a fund, people are going to say, Sherman, where are you going to get your LPs from? Do you know exactly how you're going to raise this? Like, I don't know. I have no idea. Right. But I'm not going to quit and I'm going to keep pushing. And there's uncertainty. It's the moment before the stick jumps out the plane. Right. It's the moment when you go off base. Right. You know, you'll go off base and you're in a bad place. Right. I don't know what's going to happen, but I'm going because this is what I signed up to do. And this is what I want to do. And this does something for me. Right. If I didn't want to be here, I wouldn't be here. Yep. But I volunteered to be in the military and I volunteered to do this. I'm here. Right. And I'm going to get it done. That's the advantage of the military piece. The advantage that AIN brings about, you know, how are we able to get in deals in a competitive deal environment? Well, number one, we're playing at the seed space, which is getting more competitive, yes, but it's not wildly competitive. It's not to the level of Series A or definitely not growth equity, right? Mm-hmm. So it's a little bit less sharp elbows. But what does our syndicate bring to the table? I mean, what does our fund bring to the table? I should say it's the syndicate. I was answering before I set up the answer. It's the syndicate. It's the amount of the network we can reach out to. It's my background and Emily's background. Emily has a career of incubating entrepreneurs. She did different than me. She didn't just go to a bank. She became an entrepreneur and was actually employee number three at a company, mm-hmm. right? That eventually scaled to over 40 million, hundreds of millions of revenue, right? And then spent time after that advising entrepreneurs. Right. So it's our network from a national security standpoint, from what we've done in the past, working civilian standpoint. And it's the syndicate. Right. The we now have about 300 folks. By the time this airs, hopefully we have 350, 400. And it's part of the syndicate. And it's those people that can lend a hand to these companies and have affinity to these companies.
Right.
Our group has an affinity to civic tech. Seeing better civic dialogue, us being the ones that protected this nation. Definitely defense tech, that's within our wheelhouse. Space tech, within our wheelhouse, right? Disaster tech, FEMA, disaster situation, think about military, that's within our wheelhouse. And then when it comes to vetting a veteran-led startup, really vetting that entrepreneur, right? That's a veteran. We have the ability to do tremendous diligence on that person. We can feel our way around as far as vetting the product. So that's the advantage from the you know, AIN Ventures side of the house and what we bring to the table and why we should get on the cap table for deals.
Awesome. And then just one last thing. So obviously that's the Academy Investor Network. What, and you talked before about your business school experience and also in general, just your military network. What other networks have you gotten involved in or are you a part of that really help you as you build out this venture fund?
Well, I'll start with TechStars has been wonderful. I became the entrepreneur residence, but really it's an investor in residence. I'm kind of an entrepreneur. I am an entrepreneur. I'm both actually because I started a fund for TechStars Space Tech Program and NASA and JPL. So that has been excellent as far as, you know, helping to build out my network and grow. I must give a shout out to Laurel Toby and Jenny Friedman of Supernode Ventures. I was able to work with them for some time in New York. As I was kind of, you know, transitioning out of banking and into venture. And then I'll go back to TechStars. I'm continuing along even while launching this fund. I'm continuing along with working with TechStars. I'm the investor in residence with TechStars LA, with Matt Kozlov. Fantastic experience. I can't tell you how much of a better investor I feel like that experience has made me. Seeing that many startups, vetting them, you know, a lot of time, Mark Sister, in LA talks about, you know, one of the key things is you just need reps, mm-hmm. right? I mentioned he's a Booth alum, and he has, I think still the largest fund in LA. You know, you just need reps. And Techstars has really helped me just really rapidly scale the number of reps I've seen. So I plan on working with them in some way, shape, or form well into the future. And then I joined you, joining the Kauffman Fellows. This was a Kauffman Fellows is a program that I saw again at Booth. I mean, literally, I was actually deployed. I was forward deployed when I got to Booth. I sent in my application for Booth from Bangladesh, by the way, right? At an internet cafe there. I was very ignorant, right? I actually spent, before business school, I spent about 3 years overseas consistently. So I wasn't even, it wasn't even like, I did do MLT. That's actually been another great network for me also, MLT, which I did before business school. But I wasn't like, you know, I could fly to New York, have a coffee chat, shadow someone for, I didn't have that ability, but I was overseas and I was a department head, you know, for my tour, right? So I was in charge of a group there. So I saw the Kauffman program, you know, from some folks in my class at Booth did it as a great finishing school for a lot of VCs, right? To just kind of take you to the next level. And I'm someone that's always trying to get better. I have a paranoid optimism when it comes to being a venture capitalist and investing, right? So I think you got to be an optimist, but I'm paranoid in the sense that I'm always trying to be better. What more can I be doing? Right? I am a naturally competitive person. While you don't compete completely at the seed stage, I have to make myself as attractive as humanly possible for that startup to let me on the cap table. Right? Because we all know the absolute best companies, it's just hard to get on the darn cap table.
That's right.
Right? So I'm always trying to improve AI in ventures and make us as value add as humanly possible to these entrepreneurs. Right? So, you know, that is something that I believe the Kauffman Fellowship will help me with. And that is why I decided to join you, become a Kauffman Fellow with this latest class 26. And I seek to build on my network of VCs just in general, right? I was talking to a pretty prominent Black venture capitalist who was actually in my MLT class. So he'll know I'm talking about him. And I was like, hey, man, are you all that have already raised funds? Are y'all getting together and just not inviting me or blah, blah, blah? And he was like, brother, if we are, I don't know about it. He's like, oh, man, I think we're just hooping, just trying to make it. So what that, and people do talk, but what that says is you have a network, but I've developed over the last several years, and I didn't even do it in banking well enough at all, is being intentional about developing your network. Right? Because these deals and these, you can only get so many reps. Like Mark Sisson said, you get so many reps. I can only get so many reps. I have to be intentional about being in environments with others and collaborating with them that have a ton of reps also, because they're going to have a different set of experiences. They've seen some different things. And getting with them in order to, you know, say, hey, have you ever seen a situation like this? How should I handle it? Or how should I approach this, et cetera, right? Like I need to be around those people and be intentional about it. And Kauffman Fellowship enables me to do that.
That's great. Well, I appreciate you highlighting not only your experience, but then also talking more about AI and ventures and what you're up to. So really excited to see how the fun comes together and mm-hmm. hopefully we can work on some deals together. Before we close out, I'd love to kind of go through a quick lightning round. So I got three quick questions for you. The first question is, what makes a great VC investor?
I think it is someone who is optimistic, number one. I think that's a baseline you have to have. And not everyone's an optimist. You instead of thinking about what could go wrong, you need to dream, if this idea works, what could go right? What would it look like if this idea is right? I think that you have to be a people person. To be an early stage venture investor, not necessarily a later stage venture investor, but early stage venture investor, you have to be a people person. I think you need patience, which I have not always had in life or displayed, but I at least have enough to be here now, and it's something I'm constantly working on. And I think that you have to be able to self-manifest things, self-actualize things, if you will, You have to dream of something and be able to make it happen, or be a part of a group that can make things happen. I mean, that's what these companies are doing. And you have to be a part of that with your optimistic self, with your hardworking self, and be in a situation where we're going to somehow make that occur. So I think those are just a few of the elements that are key to be a good venture investor. And there's a couple other ones, like you need to be somewhat of a technologist. You got to be interested in technology, mm-hmm. right? At least be able to, fog a mirror when it comes to code and talk technical things, because that's where things are being built. So,
great. What advice do you have for our audience of VC investors and innovators?
So these are people who are already in VC or innovators.
Yeah.
So my advice would be, let's all collab and look, I'm launching my fund. I've launched my fund, AIN Ventures. We have a 10-year fund timeline, et cetera. But I really do believe that it's a 10-year lockup, I should say. I really do believe that while B2B SaaS makes sense, I think a lot of us need to collab together and figure out a way to back more so hardware and hybrid hardware software startups. People that are, that are really, because that's really going to change the world, right? I love some of these software startups. This platform that we're talking on now, these are great and they're cool. And you're going to make a lot of money here with this. True. But let's be intentional about changing the world. So that's one thing I would say. Maybe it's a 15-year lockup with a lower management fee. There's some unique things, different things that we need to collab on in order to make sure hardware and hybrid hardware software startups get going. I mean, if you listen to Elon Musk talk about how hard it was for him to raise for SpaceX mm-hmm. and Tesla, right? It's pretty incredible. He had already been he was a second time founder, third time founder at that point, right? Second time founder, right? That's something that's really important. That has not been solved yet. The other thing I will say is that to a lot of VCs and innovators, you could go and say, hey, I'm going to invest in underestimated minorities. You could do that. Your network is a lot of your networks. Just take a look in the mirror, and your network may not necessarily be built for that, to source the best things. Go ahead and back an emerging fund manager that is African-American, Latino, or a woman, mm-hmm. right? Instead of you could bring them into the fold of your fund. There's unique ways to do this, but just go ahead and back the managers, right? And these managers will go out and find underestimated minorities that are starting these companies. 100% they will. That's something else I would say. And the third thing I would say is, you as a VC investor, ensure that the first couple of hires, we all set up, as a C stage investor, definitely an A, you're already starting talking about employee option pools, right? So you're already talking about you're gonna need to carve up 10, 20% or whatever. Start also saying, I need a diversity pool, right? Like, from the beginning, that needs to be part of the conversation from the beginning. So that's something I would say to VCs and innovators. And another thing I would say for innovators and technologists, et cetera, is start giving back to the schools in your local area, particularly some of the rougher schools, whether it be coding classes, buying people equipment. Exposure leads to expansion. I didn't create that. I got that from Fred Taylor. I think he got it from someone else. But you expose, I can't tell you enough, just exposing these children to where the world is heading and being able to operate in this world will make all the difference. They're still going to make mistakes. Not going as good as school, still may not go to the best top college or whatever have you, but it will make a very much a big difference on their life, a definitive difference on their life, if you go out and help out some of these kids and are exposing them to what you're doing. Because you guys, you VCs and you innovators, you are truly at the bleeding edge. You're at the spear point, the tip of the spear when it comes to finance and capitalism, right? So let's make sure we reach back to these children to help them out.
Great points of advice. And the final question for you, Sharman, is how do you stay sharp? What books, podcasts, blogs, or even activities inspire you?
I'm very much into science. I follow a lot of like Eric Weinstein. I read a lot about innovation. I just read a book, How Innovation Works. I say Decode the World, that Arvind Gupta, my mentor, and Poe Bronson, they just wrote a book also, Decode the World. Those guys started IndieBio. Arvin did, and Poe's running it now. That's under SOSV with Sean O'Sullivan. You know, that's a great book that I've read recently. Those two, How Innovation Works and Poe and Arvin's book. And I'm always looking at Bloomberg, Bloomberg Tech. I mean, I just consume information. And I did that really started for me I've had that since I was a kid, but it really went into hyperdrive as an intelligence officer for various reasons. And I've kind of kept that going. So those are some of the things I do. I try to collab with people and just talk to people. In New York, since things have opened back up, I'm trying to go to every meeting in person if I can, right? And I do that. And health is wealth. Also, I work out a ton. I don't just work out; I compete, right? I compete in jiu-jitsu. I run a few marathons. I did an ultra marathon right before COVID. That gives me that edge, right? I believe. And then food, the Whoop. A little food thing right here. Just grab one. Really, I grabbed it for a startup I'm looking at, but I was planning on getting one anyway. Think about doing the Oura Ring. Really just helped as well, just kind of being on, getting that sleep, getting that rest. So those are a few of the things. And I would tell anyone, there's no, LeBron had a shirt like this. There's no secret sauce. There's no special pill, man. It's just hard work and dedication, right? It's just consuming a lot of things, and some certain things resonate with you. Certain things do not resonate with you. Find out how you learn best, whether it be podcasts, books, etc., or just watching shows. I do it all. I personally love to read, but just constantly find the smartest people in where you want to focus, and buddy up next to them. And that's pretty much, to me, that's like the number one thing that you can do, and just constantly and get after it.
That's great, man. That's great. Well, with that, we'll go ahead and end it here. Sherman, it's really been a pleasure chatting with you this afternoon. Look forward, like I said, to seeing all the success of AIN Ventures and keeping track of you and your investments in the years to come.
Thank you. And I will say, if you're a dual-use technology startup or separately a veteran-led startup, please contact me.
Thanks so much. Take care.
That's a wrap. Tune in next week for another candid conversation on what makes a great VC investor with your host, the Kaufman Fellows.